Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. There will soon be a lot less money available for public housing in Massachusetts. The 2012 federal budget cuts 9%, or almost $4 billion, from the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
And new funding formulas released by HUD suggest key housing programs in Massachusetts could face double-digit cuts. That's bad news for housing agencies that are struggling with a big increase in new applicants and a backlog on maintenance and repairs.
Now, we're going to have more on that in a moment, but first, an example of what's at stake. Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea takes us to an innovative new affordable development in Jamaica Plain, the kind of project that may now be a lot harder to replicate.
Step out of the Jackson Square T-stop and start walking toward Hyde Square on Center Street, and you're immediately confronted with the hulking Bromley Heath.
Seven stories, public housing, circa 1950s. Pretty much everything we think is bad about public housing is represented there.
That's Gail Sullivan, principal at Studio G Architects in JP. In her assessment, Bromley Heath is too big, too dense, and has no relationship with the surrounding neighborhood.
If you walk by Bromley Heath, what you're faced with is a solid concrete wall. You don't get to see a front stoop with maybe some kids playing on it.
I noticed that all of the angles of the building relative to the street are diagonal.
Exactly.
It doesn't feel like it's coming up to the sidewalk.
It represents a moment in public housing development. And in that moment, they said, we're turning inward, we're going to put the playground behind the buildings. This is all about bringing our residents to each other.
That's really the nice way of putting it. The more ardent critics of this style of housing say it's all about sequestering low-income people away from the rest of society. But whatever the intention, Sullivan's new 270 Center Street across the way is a reaction against it. Her design just looks like a normal urban apartment building, a four-story brick and metal facade with retail on the ground floor, but with 30 units of affordable housing up top. It isn't withdrawn. It bellies right up to the sidewalk with storefronts on two sides, including one that faces the Southwest Corridor bike path.
And there's a restaurant coming in here, a hair salon right here.
Oh.
And around the corner, a laundromat. So services for the residents, but also for the rest of the neighborhood. So knitting the building to the neighborhood.
That's the part of the building you can see. What you can't see is just underneath the surface, a high-performance building envelope. Cool in the summer, warm in the winter, and dry year-round. Expensive up front, but in the long run designed to mitigate the huge heating costs associated with traditional public housing. Also associated with low-income housing, asthma. Studies have found anywhere from a quarter to a half of Boston public housing residents suffer from it. Inside 270 Center Street, Sullivan eschewed carpet, which can harbor mold, and other materials with so-called volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, shown to trigger asthma.
The floor we're walking on is linoleum, which is an organic material. It's linseed oil. No vinyl, no VOCs in the wall paint. So the intention here is that you don't walk in and have that new car smell to it, which is really a smell of vinyl.
Another neat trick is that the ventilation system keeps the air pressure in the hallway a little higher than in the apartments. That stops cooking smells or fumes from spreading from one unit to another. The improved air quality is something that 29-year-old single mom Cynthia Arias says she noticed right away when she moved in.
The paint that they use, even if it's a brand new building and it was just painted, is not something that is bothering me. And I'm telling you, you know, living with asthma all these years is definitely something that it will help me and my baby, since I don't know if she will be allergic to or not. Sorry.
It's okay.
Cynthia's happy, but she's also lucky.
So there's a lot more people wanting to live in this building than could live in the building, right?
1,400 families for 30 apartments, which is daunting.
Richard Thal is executive director of the Jamaica Plain Neighborhood Development Corporation, which developed 270 Center Street. He is visibly pained to have to turn people away.
It's a lottery.
So why didn't you build an 8-story building instead of a 4-story building?
There's a point where they hit the end of the subsidies.
Meaning the government will only help you pay for a single project up to a certain size.
Typically, they max out somewhere between 30 and 40 apartments.
Now, Sullivan is a proponent of smaller developments, but even she wishes she could have squeezed a few more units into this project. And you'd think the government would have an interest in subsidizing larger low-income housing buildings. The bigger the building, the lower the cost per unit.
The problem is, in a world of limited resources, Richard can't say, well, you have to give it all to me. You know, people in Worcester might have an issue with that, or people in Springfield might have an issue with that.
And the resources are about to get even more limited. 270 Center Street languished in development hell for years until the 2009 federal stimulus came along. This was one of those so-called shovel-ready projects, made possible in part with about $6 million from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. But that money has run out. And with the recent cuts to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, more projects like 270 Center Street may be harder to build than ever.
That's Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa reporting. Now, as we mentioned, the 2012 federal budget will cut HUD funding by 9%. And just recently, the department released information about how those reductions will hit states and cities. And the news is not good for Massachusetts or for Boston. Here to talk about that is Sean Caron. He's director of public policy for CHAPA. That stands for the Citizens Housing and Planning Association, a statewide affordable housing advocacy organization. And welcome, Sean Caron. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
So the federal government funds public and affordable housing through an alphabet soup of programs. As simply as you can you give us an idea of what's been cut, what will be cut in Massachusetts?
I think overall, in both the private housing resources and the public housing resources, we're talking more than $60 million in cuts this year.
$60
million. That's correct.
So put that in some kind of perspective. Is that a big number from the world that you advocate for?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you heard in the previous story about the need and how resource-constrained this environment already is. I mean, we're talking about significantly scaling back efforts to create more affordable housing opportunities, and also really, I think, curtailing the rehab and maintenance in the 35,000 units of federal public housing that spread out across the Commonwealth.
Yeah, we just heard in Adam's piece, Jackson Square, that 270 Center Street is sort of a notable exception because it was shovel ready. So there are other projects like that that wouldn't be funded, that wouldn't be able to go forward. And then a big backlog on maintenance and repairs, right?
Absolutely. I mean, both of those issues are huge issues. And, you know, these projects are shovel-ready in the fact that they've been locally permitted and we have private partners ready to build them. The problem is that state and federal partnership isn't there, and we don't have the resources from the federal government after these cuts to really move forward expeditiously.
And I guess the key question here, what did these federal cuts mean for the development of new affordable housing like the ones we just heard about? I mean, and give us some sense of the demand and the need out there for this kind of housing.
Well, the demand is tremendous, and I think it's growing more and more as rents rise and that gap between income and rents continues to grow, particularly for seniors and working families, young working families especially. If you look at just the HOME program, which is one of the many programs that we're talking about, that's a program that implements local ideas on how to create affordable housing. We're going to have $7 million at the state level, and in Boston alone, an additional $4 million in cuts. So there's developments that are ready to go that if this funding would have been provided, you'd have both new homes and jobs created, and I think that those will be lost, and it's a huge lost opportunity.
Well, what is, from where you sit, what's the strategy for reversing this? Is this a done deal? Is the budget, is it what it is, or is there a hope that this can be turned around?
I think there's a hope that it can be turned around, and I think that there's a combination of strategies, advocacy strategies, that we're going to need to look into. The first is going back to Congress to ask for more funding, and that's going to need to happen, or things will get much, much worse. The other is going to the state to try to backfill some of the loss of funding. We've seen the state step in. Just this past week, the state legislature appropriated $21 million in fuel assistance money, where Congress had cut that by $50 million to Massachusetts. So the state is, I think, willing to do some of that. They can't afford to do all of it. And we hope in affordable housing and foreclosed property acquisition in particular that the state's able to step up and fill some of that backlog.
You know, when we talk about affordable housing and the need for affordable housing, it seems like we're talking about a key plank in a sort of urban political agenda. We're watching a race for the presidency unfold and within the Republican contest. This issue, I don't think I hear anybody talking about it. Are you discouraged by that?
A little bit. You know, I think if you look at the congressional races, this will be part of the discussion. Mm. We haven't heard much at the presidential level yet. I don't think of this as an urban agenda personally. If you look across Massachusetts at Cape Cod, out to the Berkshires, you know, those are some of the areas that are struggling with this challenge the most. Certainly the cities are as well, and the gateway cities want to see some more economic diversity as well. So it looks a little bit different, but all of these places, I think, really struggle with this.
Sure. We all know that a lot of people lost their homes during the peak of the housing crisis. Many were forced into the rental market, which in Greater Boston is very expensive. Are public housing agencies still seeing a big influx of new applicants because of this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're seeing it at the lowest income levels, where there's just tremendous need now, where the job losses have had a disproportionate impact. And so the demand is tremendous. So
a big challenge, and a big challenge that remains. Sean Caron, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Sean Caron. He's director of public policy for CHAPA, the Citizens Housing and Planning Association.